Hello, this is Scott Price for People of Interest. On March 15th, I talked with Brian Kelsey. Brian Kelsey is a writer, speaker, and public policy consultant specializing in local and regional policy, management, fiscal reform, and regulatory policy. Brian Kelsey in 2004 was a part of Mayor Sam Cates' Red Tape Commission in Winnipeg. He was also, from 2005 to 2008, he was Sam Cates' budget advisor. Currently, he runs the site stateofthecity.ca. I interviewed Brian about the 2011 operating budget for the City of Winnipeg. A budget is a very important political document as it kind of gives a roadmap to what you can expect from a government in their next term. What is this most recent budget saying about the current civic government? Where are they going? What can we expect?
Well, this budget is a significant sea change for Sam Cates' administration for a couple of reasons. It does spend more on policing and public safety, which has been the habit, a city hall habit for the last several years. So that shouldn't be a surprise. It spends enough to close off many of the mayor's lingering promises related to police cadets and the helicopter and some new officers from the last year or two, so that's pretty significant as well. But the other major change, of course, is that we now have, despite pretensions to the contrary, an end to the property tax freeze at City Hall. And you've also got some reversals of policy in order to poach monies from parking authority, the water utility, and so on. And so essentially the taps have been turned on again. But now that this line has been crossed, you're in an interesting situation where there's room for the mayor and his supporters to start to spend. And so the question is going to be, what does that money get spent on? And is there going to be some kind of backlash from the 50% of the mayor's supporters who expected him to be more restrained in terms of his priorities and spending in general.
Hmm. But in some way, has the mayor kind of reached the point of no return where he kind of has to turn the taps on after all these years of really not doing that?
Well, sure. I mean, I personally am in a funny position on this in that, generally my approach to civic politics is that of a fiscal conservative, and I do believe the city still has, there's still places where it could save, both through aggressive restructuring and through, creative financing of some of its priorities, and we can talk about that. But in the end, that even if all of those ideas had been put into the hopper 1 or 2 years ago, when they would have needed to have been executed to actually deliver savings for this year, you still have enough pressure both on the public service or public safety side, and on the city's infrastructure deficit, that all of those cuts combined wouldn't have been enough to deal with the city's problems. So yes, they do have to turn on the taps to address conflicting priorities. Part of what's funny about the change we've seen in the last few weeks with this budget is that it doesn't. That's not necessarily happening smoothly, because instead of standing up and in a straightforward way saying, okay, now we've got to deliver on these priorities and here's how we're going to do it, you've got this kind of stumbled, backdoor attempt to deal with some of these problems with the frontage levy increase and a few other changes. And so insofar as this means that people can spend on wish list priorities, some of that's happening. Insofar as is this enough of a change to generate the revenue to actually solve problems? Well, no, it isn't. And so that's why it's going to be interesting to see, next year, are we going to see more increases for downtown projects and center venture, or are we going to see more reinvestment in roads and streets and transit? And so that's where the question mark is still left. We're spending more, we're taxing more, but are we spending and taxing on things that are really priorities?
So what should we be taxing on that's a priority, and what should that tax go to for spending that's a priority?
Well, if the city reached a point where it can no longer afford to pay for what it needs to pay for without a property tax increase, I mean, I think the straightforward thing to have done would have been to have increased property taxes. I personally think frontage levies should be a part of the property tax mix, oddly for the same reasons that Glenn Murray was pushing for frontage levies in his New Deal concept 9 or 10 years ago. But the problem we've had is that the way they were introduced as part of that mix was more about hiding a property tax increase for the mayor's political benefit than it was about actually creating a long-term intelligent tax policy. I think Winnipeg's municipal property taxes are relatively low. The straightforward thing to have done would have been to have stood up and said, here's what our target for increases is going to be over the next few years, here's where that money is going to go, and to do that in a transparent way. The obvious target for new funding is infrastructure. I'm not talking about new infrastructure or wish list infrastructure. I'm talking about the fact that we're reaching a point where even hardcore bicycle and transit advocates have to admit that, you know, streets are still decaying, bridges need to be repaired, pipes that are carrying our water need to be fixed. And that should have been the focus of the city's energies years ago, not just now, to catch up with that so-called infrastructure deficit so that problem isn't hanging around our necks like an albatross. The problem is that too much of the money that's in the budget is actually going to new infrastructure, which is in the aggregate adding to the maintenance burden. And you've also got a lot of confusion, quite rightly, over whether frontage levies are helping the infrastructure problem or not, since legally they can only go to infrastructure maintenance, yet the city is reducing its maintenance budget this year in what's been called a bait-and-switch scheme.
Right. Now, more to that point about kind of the backdoor way of doing it, with the frontage levies, and then just it seems that with Kate's being in office all of these years, it seems that that's kind of the way business is done. It seems that's the political culture. And even more so, I suppose, that even just this kind of backdoor dealing, it's also backdoor dealing, but then it also doesn't even get you to the place where you can solve the problems. Right.
Well, exactly. And to me, leadership on a range of issues, whether it's fiscal or regulatory or a dozen other problems, is to stand up 6 months out and say, here's the problem we're going to fix in the next 6 months, and explain to everybody how you're going to fix it, and build up enough momentum and consensus that everybody accepts that the solution's the solution. What you have happening here is the exact opposite. Literally days, even hours before the budget was tabled, the mayor was doing interviews, dropping the hint that property taxes would be frozen, without a word mentioning that there would be 3 points worth of property tax increase, only it would happen to come through the frontage levy. somebody who was truly leading the city and trying to deal with the city's problems would have been straightforward and candid and said, as that budget was being printed, look, we have to look at different solutions, and here's why. And this is not the first time this has happened. Just as I was resigning and leaving City Hall, one of the points of dispute was how the city was executing on its new accommodations tax or hotel tax. The city's public position on that tax was that it was doing it to pay for Destination Winnipeg and convention center services and a number of other things. But that, too, like this frontage levy increase, was a matter of using the new money, the hotel tax money, to apply it to existing budget commitments for Destination Winnipeg and the Convention Center, and then pulling out the property tax money that was available, so that in the end, even though it legally wasn't going to general revenue, the motive to do it was to produce a general revenue benefit, which is exactly what happened. And, you know, we've seen this before as well, certainly with green funding from the federal government early in the decade that was in the end used for roads and bridges through a similar example of budget engineering. Now and again, it may be necessary to pull that kind of stunt, but the more you make a habit of it, the more people get cynical about their civic government. And that's not, you know, Mayor Cates was elected by people who were hoping to end the cynicism, not to increase it.
Hmm. And I guess more to that point we were just talking about, and you brought up your time in City Hall. I mean, at the panel discussion a couple weeks ago, you talked about kind of the inertia at City Hall. But, I mean, at the same rate, because you were an insider at City Hall, what were you doing to try to stop this inertia? I mean,
fair question. And to your point about backroom discussions, I mean, part of what makes it easy for me to sound off about some of these issues is that I know that these debates have happened internally, and questions were asked and never answered. It was no secret, certainly, to the mayor and many of the councillors who were supporting him, that there would be there would have to be a point when property tax where the property tax freeze ended, and you'd need another alternative. Literally for years, and certainly in my case, in early 2008, just before I left, whether it's financial analysts or councillors or public servants or political advisors, everybody has continually raised the point that certain commitments, like the commitment to wipe out the business tax, are unsustainable if you're increasing spending on other sides of the ledger. Certain commitments, like the property tax freeze, are inconsistent with asking for more money from the provincial government for infrastructure investments and claiming you've got an infrastructure deficit that you can't deal with, and so on throughout the list. And so I think part of the problem is that a lot of people talk about these issues internally at City Hall, but there's a real sort of community of silence there where even though everybody knows what the problems are, they know there's inertia, they know there's a lack of decisive decision-making, they know that projects aren't getting finished, there's a consensus of silence that actually standing up and griping about these things is treated as rude or disloyal or needlessly confrontational, and so too many people are just sitting on their hands. I'd be really intrigued to know, for example, I mean, there's two or three councillors who describe themselves as hardcore fiscal conservatives and political conservatives who are supporters of the mayor right now, who are going to be voting for a budget with tax increases in them, and they too ran telling their constituents that those increases wouldn't be necessary. I'd be really interested to know what's going through their minds now. And more to the point, I'm interested to know why people in the community and journalists aren't being more aggressive about asking them if they feel conflicted about this change in policy and priorities on the fly.
Right. I think getting back more to this political culture of, it seems right now, of which breeds the cynicism, the inertia, the lack of decision-making. But I'm just kind of curious because, at the panel discussion, you talked about how when you would be in the EPC meetings, it was kind of like a Lord of the Flies, right?
Yeah.
And it was really chaotic. But at the same time, on your blog, you said that, Sam Cates still has the ability, the talent and the clout and the mandate to be a decisive good mayor. How do you reconcile those two? Because it seems like those are two completely conflicting viewpoints.
Well, I reconcile them because I've seen both. And the problem, and I think many of the mayor's constituents now, more than they might have a few years ago, can see the discrepancy too. That there have been moments, and I've seen them, and I'll give you an example in a second, where if the mayor sort of steps up and makes a decision and exercises common sense, that he, looks and sounds and is the sort of creative, aggressive, ordinary business guy that everybody thought that they were electing. On the other hand, when you get down to the day-to-day grind of making announcements and then opening projects and then making excuses 3 years later when the project hasn't actually been completed, when you get down to the business of asking tough questions about, well, what is our tax policy, and you're not, you know, years after the mayor was elected, you're still not actually getting an answer that reconciles all of these competing promises. That's the other side, and that's the result of, on one level, a mayor who you know listens to too many people and is trying to please too many different constituencies, without actually, you know, pulling the trigger and making a decision to end, you know, those discussions and those conflicts, and so they go on forever. Maybe this will reassure people, but I mean, to take one example, there was an incident years ago when there was a problem with some constituents who had been, we'll just say because there was a legal issue involved, who'd been accidentally harmed by the city in some way and were forced to leave their house. And, you know, the mayor's approach to dealing with that was to sort of get upset, as any normal person rightly should have, that the city was still dickering over how to help these people, and to sort of say, look, you know, get them a hotel room for a few days, put it on my credit card, and make sure they're taken care of, and we'll figure out how that gets covered afterwards. That's the kind of sort of personal, decisive action that, you know, that superb and even legendary mayors are known for across this continent, the kind of mayor who gets involved directly to fix the problem so that people can get on with their lives. We're not seeing a lot of that. What we're seeing instead is an administration, not simply in the mayor's case, that's getting better and better at making announcements of things that are designed to create the appearance of action without actually getting to a result. We don't have, you know, we're not rolling back crime in the North End. We're simply managing it. So, hey, great, we've got police cadets and a helicopter. That means we're fighting crime. Other cities passed the point, to use that as an example, long ago, where their metric for fighting crime was, is there less crime, not have we spent more money to try and solve it.
And I guess talking more about this, I guess this was supposed to be about the budget, but now we're talking more about this, these other things. But like
the budget is a
is a reflection of that.
It's a perfect illustration of all this, though, Scott. And then take the water utility case, for example, that the city literally spent years, starting in about 2000, mid 2007, squeezing out one of its bad habits, and that bad habit was looting the water utility under the table or so-called, you know, dividends and other payments in order to subsidize the tax rate. And we were actually able, by the end of 2008, through a series of revenue shifts and some savings found here and there and everything else, to end that practice once and for all, which is something the mayor committed to do in 2004. One of the reasons there was a proposal to create a more independent, self-governing water utility was to make sure that those raids never happened again. And that was something that several councillors around the EPC table strongly supported in debate and debate and decision after decision. It's something the mayor profiled in the State of the City speech, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, because you've got to get through, you know, a few days' worth of bad news cycles, instead of being honest and saying we can't afford to keep doing that, that policy achievement, which played out literally over years, has just been reversed with the blink of an eye. And the mayor's changed his position. Dan Vandell, of all people, has changed his position. Scott Fielding has changed his position. All of a sudden, it's okay again to loot, you know, $17 million from the water utility, just to the point where it's needing that revenue to keep its credit costs down and borrow more money to build new sewage and water treatment facilities. So, you know, that's how the inertia plays out in a way that actually affects real people, is that, you know, 3 weeks ago you could rely on the fact that your water rates were moving up on a predictable arc because they were necessary to pay for new water services. Now, next year, those rates could be skyrocketing and you won't have a clue what that money's going for. And that's all just because, you know, the winds blew in a different direction and suddenly the priorities, how the headlines look tomorrow as opposed to what was the priority 2 or 3 years ago.
So, I mean, and then with this culture, as we call it, the culture of inertia in Winnipeg, I mean, in a lot of ways, it seems just that it gets perpetuated, obviously, I suppose, because politicians and I guess even a lot of the people more on the inside basically benefit from it because they it seems that they get off relatively unscathed here.
Well, let me. It's easy to say that, and I don't blame people for saying that. But let me give you the flip side, and that is that the kind of indifference actually spills over to the opposition side as well. I genuinely believe that one of the reasons why, I'm not blaming the victim here, but I genuinely believe that one of the reasons why the mayor's administration has made many of the mistakes it has been because opposition critics and opposition groups and opposition counselors have gotten much more casual, if I can use that polite term, about how they raise questions as well, that they are part of the consensus of silence that I'm talking about. That it used to be common less than 10, 12 years ago that if you were somebody criticizing Glenn Murray or Susan Thompson and you were a member of council or even somebody who wanted to be on council someday, that you wouldn't wait politely 30 days for the next council meeting to raise an issue and then stand up in question period, throw out a few questions, and accept the answers. That there was a constant cycle of debate and question and criticism, that committees were seen as an opportunity for councillors to ask tough questions with the cameras running. Now there's, the finance committee barely needs to meet because the public servants show up, they table a few pieces of paper. Everybody, left, right, and center, just smiles and accepts what's there, and they shut down 20 minutes later. That's a, the City Hall's Finance Committee, in the middle of all these budget discussions, that's what they do. And so, to a certain degree, if there's inertia, I think everybody shares, me included, shares some responsibility for having allowed it to happen, because those tough questions aren't being asked 30 days a month, 12 months a year. And, that's, I think, step one to starting to change it, is to be, relentless with the curiosity and relentless with the questions about, nowhere have I seen a website or a list that says these are the 10 projects that the mayor announced in 2005. Why aren't they finished yet? we had a red tape clock that was counting down how many days were left to implement all the red tape recommendations. Where's the red tape clock for the water park? Where's the red tape clock for the stadium that's 3 or 4 years late? Where's the red tape clock for the business tax that was supposed to have been nearly wiped out by now?
We know that there's going to be all these labor negotiations coming up. I'm pretty sure that a lot of these things have not been factored into the budget. Can we see this budget completely balloon depending how these labor negotiations go?
It's actually hard to say because in the past I'm not revealing a secret so much as a quiet understanding here. But in the past, the city always found ways to budget in anticipation for the results of labor negotiations without actually showing it in the budget, that you'd have sort of a fund that would get labeled with some innocuous title like, human resources reserve or something like that, so that, you weren't tipping your hand and yet you still had money free to deal with changes in that. And there is actually with police, fire, and paramedics off the top of my head, in all three of those budgets, I've certainly seen upfront evidence that there was money budgeted for, reasonable increases that you'd expect arbitrators to award them if things got ugly in negotiations. But the city is openly saying that there wasn't money in the budget for QP. So it's now presented with the problem of if they did budget that money and now they don't make changes to the budget, it's going to look like they were being deceptive and inconsistent again. If they didn't make allowances for that funding, they're now going to have to either cut something or increase something, and that won't look pretty either. And I do think, from my experience looking at this budget, it looks as though a lot of it was slapped together. So I'm also concerned about things like fuel, where, fuel costs are obviously on an upward trend right now. We don't know how long they'll last, but easily one of the most price-sensitive things that's in there whenever you develop the City of Winnipeg's budget is fuel costs, and you know, I'd like to see somebody ask, what price were these budgets submitted at in when they were first developed in, say, you know, late October and November and December of last year, and have we made allowances for the fact that fuel is going to cost more as well? Those are the sorts of questions that, used to be asked in public, and nowadays the habit is, if they're even asked in private, all that happens is everybody sort of waits and hopes to paper it over by year end. And we saw that with the hydro lawsuit, where as late as late November, the official position from the mayor himself and others was still that they believed that that money would appear from the lawsuit in time for the end of the last fiscal year.
Now, at the start, you kind of talked about these restructuring of the budget on how how the city could save money and stuff like that. So could you go maybe into one of those sorts of, I guess I couldn't call it a scheme, but one of those sorts of ideas that you had mentioned?
Well, let me pick on a very small one, but one that I know will be near and dear to the hearts of many of your listeners. Anybody who's heard me speak before won't be surprised to know that I'm ever more skeptical of the center venture model of delivering delivering on the service of downtown development. We've got a parking agency that the city owns that's running parking. Through Forks North Portage, which is one-third city-owned, we've got public parking there as well. We've got two different development agencies, technically, Forks North Portage and Center Venture, in addition to development staff who work for the city. We've got two different business improvement zones, which don't receive city funding directly, but certainly have access to revenues, which are you know, effectively coming out of a miniature tax base. You've got a downtown council, a downtown committee. All of these different agencies are spending time and money trying to develop downtown policy and encourage downtown development. And if you look closely, a good deal of the work that's being done there could be done by, a small office in the city bureaucracy with a much smaller footprint and much clearer lines of accountability. That doesn't save you huge amounts of money, but remember, Center Venture is asking for an increase of $250,000 in its grant this year, over and above hundreds of thousands of dollars it's received in the past. It also controls city assets, and the sale of those city assets, the proceeds end up going back to Center Venture's bottom line and not to the city's bottom line. So that's just one example of many where if you took a cold, hard look at what your priorities were and the agencies that are in place and the staffing that's in place, you could be delivering the same result with maybe fewer people or maybe more productivity from a different structure of operations.